everyone, welcome to yet another episode of Contact Lost, the Polish Warhammer 40k competitive podcast, where we talk about, obviously, competitive Warhammer, but recently we've been talking about the WTC. We are doing the series called Creme de la Creme, which is about basically inviting the best of the best, the top 10 teams from the last WTC that happened last year, and we are discussing with captains and players of those teams. What are their plans, their ambitions for this year? What lessons learned they have taken from the last year's adventure? And essentially, we are, you know, prepping for the event this year. I'm your host, Tweak. With me today, I have my usual co-host, Joker.
Hey, guys.
And Nathan Henning from SatCheck.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, guys. Good to have you, as always. And today, I think it's an episode that many people have waited for. Definitely, I have waited for it. I know that members of the Polish national team have been waiting for it. Some other people have been waiting for it as well, because I got some whispers and some messages and PMs and so on and so on. So today, we talk about Team England. And with us today, we have the captain of Team England, Tony Chu.
Hey, evening, guys. Thanks for having me.
So it finally is happening. We finally have you here. You know, we will try to squeeze as many secrets from you as possible. So let's see how it goes. But yeah, let's start with the very beginning. Let's start as usual. So Tony, I listened to your podcast with Ishik. I think it was called the Squadcast podcast, where that was like preparation for the WTC last year. And one of the things that you mentioned there really drew my attention. You said something along the lines of, I've been playing this game since I was 6 years old. Is that even possible?
Well, I'm 40 now, so it's been a while. I remember, I suppose I class it as, I picked up Space Crusade and I picked up Hero Quest. And I thought that those were the greatest games. And I remember getting those and I found another set of Space Crusade, so I had two Space Crusades, and they had the expansions. And then I remember I was going through a town center with my mum on the bus, and I saw this place called Games Workshop, and I was like, just generally go, we've got to go there. Dragged her down the other end of the town to this little place, and it was just full of models, and I had no idea at that time that 40k existed as anything outside of Space Crusade, or that there was a wider kind of company or anyone that made anything. My first model I bought was a metal Thunderhammer Stormshield Terminator, and I played terrible Space Wolf armies, but due to me through second dead vortex grenades and virus bombs, and oh yeah, it was great.
Yeah, sounds amazing. So you've come a certain way from that time to become a captain of Team England, I guess. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the team. First of all, how do you actually become the captain of one of the most esteemed, regarded, and dangerous teams in the world?
I think captaincy for WTC is something that sounds really prestigious and inspiring, but it's just a lot of work, a lot of chasing, and a lot of management behind the scenes. I think something we really tried to do in the times since I've been, I started in 2013, but then I helped as vice captain initially, and then as co-captain now with Josh Roberts. We've tried to really expand our reach as a group. When I started, it was very much a group of kind of seven or eight guys, and every couple of years they'd invite one or two extra in. We've tried to grow that, and social media and that, you know, the reach and development of things like Discord now make it so much easier to get together, to chat, to share ideas. And you know, we've come a long way from when I started, and we were doing forum posts and you'd wait to see if somebody updated their comment on your list. Now it's people jumping on TTS to play games and get practice. So the captain, to be captain, I think you just have to, certainly have to go to WTC. That's in our charter as a team, that you can't put yourself forward for captain until you've been and experienced it. And we've got lots of really established singles players who come forward, but still come to the event and go, gosh, that is not what I thought it would be. That isn't the experience. I mean, a name you might know, Mike Porter, does really well in a lot of events. He's gone over to Vegas before and done really well. Had been in for a chance with the ITC. I remember when he did his first one, he was like, the pressure actually in the rounds against the big teams, it's just completely different to what you expect. And that was his first year with the team, was the year we won it most recently. So there's a whole range of things that I think you have to just go and experience the event and get that, you know, alongside your singles play, and really appreciate what it means to grind for the points, not to give up games, not to go into a bad match and just go, oh, I'm going to lose this. As many experienced tournament players, I'm sure, will agree with.
Mm-hmm. All right. So tell me, or tell us, how is the team created? Because I think England is known for a lot of solo tournaments. So obviously there are team tournaments as well, the home nations, many others, but primarily singles. And then what key, if there is a key, do you use to actually select players for the team?
So we very much, we have the event every year in August, you know, hopefully we do well and we come back and we give ourselves the rest of August off. But the existing captain or captains will have to the end of that month to put forward kind of how they want to go for the next year. We have a voting system where anybody's played for the team or been a coach for the team or been a team at any of the team events where we've officially been Team England, like the home nations you mentioned, get to vote in the new captaincy. So it's not just, again, a group of six or seven experienced vets. You can be voting for that. The captains put forward their plan for the year and we go straight away as soon as we hit September the 1st. If there's a clash of captains and people want to go for it, then they'll put their charters up. We'll vote between them and we'll have that established usually by the middle of September so we can start recruiting. Then we try to just chase down as many people as we know, as we're familiar with on social media. And we open up as many avenues as possible. This year, we did it through Discord and we were lucky to have two team events in quick succession. One a six-man, one an eight-man. One run by Gaz Jones, the Wales 40K team captain over at Glasshammer Gaming. Another one at Element Games. And it's throwing people into teams and throwing them onto lists that maybe they're not used to and going, cool, come up with a list. Let's see how you do. We try to split our experienced players then up between those teams and do a bit of coaching, do a bit of pairing work, get them to fill in a matrix and get them into that routine. And you already get people who don't want to take advice on a list or don't want to share their theories or are focused on a singles mindset and don't have that appreciation or that ability or maybe that interest in thinking about how I'm going to write my list to do a role for a team. You know, so lots of people are very good at writing a list that goes to singles and gets the points, but doesn't always work in a team event in that regard. And, you know, and then there's the extra things that I'm sure we could talk about, like WTC, where you're going to go in the order, where you're going to think about the terrain, how the missions are going to work out. This year with the new edition is a mind, you know, a bit of a mind bender. So we go through all of that as much as possible. And we tried to pick by January, really, maybe February at the latest. I always talk to other teams of the nations of that some pick really early, some pick a lot later. I know Poland picks a lot later, don't they? Because you like to give it as much time to go right close to the event to see who's the best player, who's really tried hard and gone, yeah, I'm right at the peak of my game. And there is that argument, I suppose.
I think it's... Well, Joker, what at what time is the top three from the league announced? Do you know that by any chance?
Because the top three is announced at the end of the year, right? But it's not something mandatory. I mean, this year, two or out of three, or maybe all three of them.
All three.
Yeah, they just resigned their spots that they'd have from the league rankings, right? So it's kind of not relevant this year. And so the team was picked, I think, in May. So, yeah, like Tony said, pretty late. But what I wanted to ask in regards to that, do you have many people wanting to go to be part of Team England? Is that like a big group?
32 this year put themselves forward that we had solid. To then split up between teams and groups. We did cut a couple out of that, didn't make it into that 32. Then we did a couple of events. We went to 16 and then we went down to 8 pretty much from there. We did do it slightly differently this year in that myself and Josh brought in Matt Robertson and Manny Chima, both experienced. Matt experienced on the WTC side with Wales and with some due to reffing. Manny, experienced singles player. And we have picked the best 8 players we think going at the time from the events that we've seen. I mean, that means that I'm coaching this year rather than playing because I can hold my hands up. And I said after last summer's event, I'd found it hard to juggle family life and children and just everything and get to all the big events. I do think that is important in testing things and getting the practice. And I could do TTS and, you know, the odd practice games, but it's not the same, I think, as going to big events and performing. And I think we want to show outwardly that you don't just get a place because you've been before. So I'm stepping back to do the coaching, which is an interesting one this year. especially as we're starting to get to this kind of crunch time of army lists, who's on what faction, what we practice. It's a funny feeling to not be in the eight picking an army for me and thinking how I'm going to run that at the event. But I think it is really important that you pick the best eight players. And it is, I suppose it is harder for us doing it that far ahead, knowing we started to hear, hadn't we, even in January, February, about the rumours of the new edition coming. So here we are.
Yeah, so feels interesting to say, going from 32 plus players down to 8 in the space of like 4 to 5 months out of possible 10, 11. So has there ever been a situation that a player would be swapped out due to, well, obviously random stuff happens, but maybe they kind of lost interest or just didn't play that well anymore or something like that? And then you follow up to that, are any of the players that didn't make the eight-man team somehow involved in the preparations?
So I'll come back to your question you asked me before about being captain for England. Well, one of the not perks of the job is telling somebody they haven't made it into the one of those cuts, which nobody else wants to do. Everybody's quick to give an opinion, go, no, I don't think they could make it. But nobody wants to have that phone call or have that chat or have that Skype call. So that we do try to offer as much as possible, to get to your second question, people the chance to come and coach, to be involved. If they haven't made it, it's their first time, we say, come and see what it's like. Come and do the singles. And we're actually bringing 5 coaches along with us this year. And I say 5 coaches because it's three guys who've never been before, have applied for the team, maybe weren't ready to show that level or didn't show us that level yet, or haven't played 40k long enough that we could go, we're really sure that you're better than this person. But we've got other really experienced 40k players who are doing well in the single scene, have done really well at the team events. So we do try to involve anybody who wants to come, and we'll have them as part of that wider group. And you know what, I think it helps if you have a bad round or you have a tough game against another top nation. You know, sometimes it's fine margins, but sometimes people can get annoyed. They think that somebody's made a mistake or they've played something wrong. The more people you can just to kind of dissipate that and keep that kind of nice atmosphere to the team, I think really helps. Just like in a while, you know, you look at professional sports, it's not just the players and the coach and that's it. They have a team behind them. They have wider groups. They have people to talk about. And certainly now, as we're in this kind of strategizing phase of what factions are we going to take, we were roping those coaches in. They are testing things and feeding back as much as players at the moment. And we're all kind of, nobody is more important than any other person, except that those players have to come out with a list and a faction they're happy with to go forward with. And then the other side of that, how in terms of player, we have in the past, there was once that we picked a player that, twice actually, once we picked a player and we picked him on merit. He was playing at the time, he was playing Sisters and Space Wolves. And we picked him, he was doing really well. He'd done well at a couple of big events in the UK. And we got him together for a practice weekend and there was a nerf to that faction. And we said, do you want to try Chaos Demons? And it was one of those ones where none of us knew him, but we chatted to him. We thought he had a really good 40K knowledge. We played him. He didn't actually know how fundamentals, like how the psychic phase worked in that edition of the game. I think it was 6th. He didn't quite know how the combat rules were. And like, we were suddenly at this phase with, oh my gosh, like he came up with the line, I always just kind of go with what my opponent tells me and just roll my dice for it. And I'm like, oh! And that was
tactics for WTC.
You know, that was so hard because he felt it more than anybody, I think. He felt like, oh, I didn't think this was how this was going to work. And I thought I could just run this. And he was the first to say, my list isn't going to work if this is going to be the FAQ that's come in. So we did swap him for somebody else. And we did write a last minute list that didn't do very well that year. And it's something that maybe it's been a couple of years of learning, I think, where we've refined our how we select, when we select, how we pick the factions, and just be able to go, well, we're not going to make that mistake again. Another one is, I mean, Manny Chima, I mentioned already, he got onto the team he was his first year applying, and it was between him and an experienced player. And we were split, because he was really keen, really good, did really well at team events, but that other player had the experience, and so we went with that. And then that player lost his passport. And we found out about that on the Monday before we were flying to WTC on the Wednesday. So we rang Manny and we went, we need you. And he came and played this Screamers Demon list that he'd never played before. And the rest is history, really, from there, because he did really well, and he gelled really well with the team, and he had a really great event, and he got the buzz and the bug for it, you know, and that's it. He wanted to come back. And we can't get rid of him now. He's stuck with us, I'm afraid.
I guess a really good question kind of leading up off of that is, if somebody's interested in trying to get on to the English WTC team, what's kind of the process if somebody wants to be a prospect for doing that?
So we currently have our Facebook group is where we've been leading through most recently, in terms of you can find that Team England 40K community, and that will take you. There's a link there to our Discord, which, because we've grabbed, I think I would say maybe when I was first doing vice captaincy stuff, everything was in Facebook and there's groups on there. We've transitioned over to Discord now, and there's a bit of a more of an open chat. Currently, there's a lot of closed forums whilst we're practicing ideas and throwing things in, but certainly be in and around that space so that when we open up our selection process again, that's going to be after the summer event. You can get involved. We'll invite you to some practice days. You can sign up for some of the team events that we'll try and do. And then it is about posting and sharing what you're doing with lists and talking about those and coming along to meet us. Because I think, and coming back to one of the things we talked about before, how do you get on the team is you have to show you can play the game. You have to show you can play the game in the right way and that you can work with the people that are going to be there. And it is a weird event, isn't it? It's a competition and it's a holiday and it's practice and it's training and it's late nights talking about things and sharing ideas. You have to be able to work in all of those settings. We've had some players who are really fantastic, but they're just not good socially, in terms of they won't share ideas, or they're always right or you're always wrong, however I want to frame it. Just difficult to work with in a team setting. And we've had to say, sorry, you haven't made it. Some take that really well, some take that really badly. And again, that's the role of captain. You have those chats separate to the team, hopefully to make the best team. And I think that it's really tough now, more than ever. When I first started, there was the big five or six nations, and Poland were some of the boogeymen that we had to come along and play. But now I do think that the way the game's gone, and you look at teams like the semi-professional, you know, US team, the Australians that put in crazy boot camps, don't they, where they go for like, I don't know how, but they, you know, leave their wives and families for 2 weeks and go and play 40K and come up with these family-honed lists. It's funny, we're not as big a nation, we're not as far apart in the country, but we don't have that time and that facility within the timetables of the guys to do it. So currently it's lots of one-dayers, throwing in weekends here, meet at a house, meet at a shop, whatever we can do, and then loads of TTS. And that seems to be paying dividends at the moment. Quite happy we've got some ideas to throw at list submission.
Awesome. So I guess since we've talked kind of about the team selection process, who are the Team England members that are going to WTC as playing members?
So our playing eight this year. So we've got Josh, my co-captain. He has been doing absolutely smashing with a number of lists this year. So he's going to play. We've got Manny Chima, who I've already mentioned. We've got Matt Robertson's going to be playing. I'm just going through my most experience to our newer players. We've got Alex Harrison, who's been on the team now for a couple of years. We've got Mike Porter, who's now going to his third WTC. And then we've got Vic Vijay, who's new to the team, but not the 40K scene in the UK. We've got Nassim Fushain, who's also in the same point. And I always forget our eighth player, because I always do it this way.
Great. You know, somebody a pint at this
rate. No, it's do you know what? It's our list writer extraordinaire, Chris Kinnear, who's also new to the team. So the man who is just is all over our Discord. But I mean, I think that is something I'm really proud of. That even though I'm not playing on it, this is my 10th year of WTC, and every year we put at least one new player. Every year. Awesome. And I think you have to. And it's three new players this year. And Chris started with us. I had no idea who he was after last year's WTC, but he started going to some events, met some of the guys, started playing with them on TTS, came to some of the team events, absolutely smashed it with the list he was doing, whether it was a put forward, you could put him into a tough match and he'd go, yeah, I'll take that, I'll get the points, showing that drive. And as I've said already, he's so keen about list writing, how we could do this, how we could do that. Great. Vic is really experienced, really calm, very methodical player. Loves to pick apart a list and a strategy. So he's really enjoyed kind of being immersed in that WT setup. And Nassim's our kind of, he's kind of our maverick from Top Gun, kind of, we're going to throw
prodigy.
Him yeah. He's that, I've got to drop a few, hashtag US Metasoft references at this point as we go through. I don't know if you saw that when he got to Adepticon on the top table and he had that little message to the world over there for him and his other European opponent.
I got to talk to Nas during the team event afterwards because me and Nas are actually reasonably good friends.
Yeah.
And he was telling me how he basically supernova'd his way through players all weekend. He's like, my games don't last more than 30 to 45 minutes while you're like 2 hours into one of your team games. I'm like, oh, that's nice, Nas. That's nice.
Trying to tell him that that is not going to happen to WTC is not working. He is planning to come and just go, yeah, that's me. I'm done.
He doesn't lack confidence. He has the confidence of the young, as they would say.
Yes, the young and inexperienced, even I would say. Okay, Tony. I need to, before we go to like talking about the team some more. I just want to get one thing straight because you mentioned this twice already, and I don't know if that's just a figure of speech or do you actually have something like that. You've mentioned the team's charter. Do you have an actual team charter, like a document that outlines, you know, what the team aims to do, blah, 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 or really? Okay, so it's that level of, let's call it professionalism, that you actually have a document. Do you have all the team members read it before they get on the team? What's the point of that?
So it's posted as a fixed item on our Facebook group. And it's something of a thing of transparency because we don't just assume that we're Team England and this is it, we're the team and we run it and nobody else could ever do it. Somebody might take over from me one day to do some of the bits and the admin and the chasing that I do. Currently, nobody wants to do that. But I'm the old man of the team now. And I, like I said, as I get to less events, I'm less hot on it. Somebody will go, can I do that? Can I do that? And I guess that's just how you pass the torch. I think that's how it should happen. So the charter is there to sort some staples out. I mean, there have been some amendments
over the years.
I would say the biggest amendment was we have put that you have to be an English player, so an English nationality to put yourself forward for captain, Nick Nanavati. And we have also tightened that murking loophole because I think whilst Nick did really well for us and we had a great event with him that year.
Yes, you did.
I was going to say that you're lacking a key component of previous victories by having no American.
we've got a few interesting characters, as you said, to make up for him. But it's a funny one. Like that year, I'll never forget that year. Josh rang me in the February. We were talking about the team selection. We weren't sure about the last player, and they said, I've just had this chat with Nick, and Nick's like, can I come and merc for you? And we were like, I said to Josh, I don't actually think there's a reason why we can't. And I remember having the chat with Tom and Neil at the time, and they were kind of like, there isn't a reason why we can't, but we're not very happy about it. There will be a reason in the future.
And then, next year, Tom takes, four mercenaries onto his team, I think. So, like...
But I take his point, though, that he, you know, we're one of the, as you said, we're looking to be, we try to be one of the big teams and pride ourselves to be one of the big teams. And Nick does a great job for us and was wonderful in all sorts of ways. But I think we are doing our country and our community a disservice if we don't go, you know what, there's 8 good players in the UK and it's about going with 8 players from the UK. So we are a lot stricter on that. That will never happen again. You know, and WTC back that up as well. But I think their rule about that is, you know, it's not something that's kind of, they've now put in a giant stone obelisk outside of the venue that you've got to, that's it. But I think we just agree that that isn't something they want to see again. And we're happy with that. We took a lot of stick by that when we won it. And we had Nick, but he was just happy. He was a 2-time winner with 2 different teams. I think that's he can take that forever to his grave, can't he? So
what you're saying is we shouldn't anticipate Richard Ziegler coming out of the rafters with a steel chair to like take out whoever you're playing.
Siegs, if you want to find your English ancestry and then put that out there.
Shameless, absolutely shameless. Love it.
Yeah, you said you took a lot of stick for that, but you know, I'm sure you were very depressed drinking champagne from your cup when they were like joking
I said to a few people, like, you know, it doesn't, I don't think you put Nick on the team. Nick did a really great job that year with Gene Steeler Cult, but Like, no teams roll over and let you win WTC. It is the hardest event I've ever done. And it is, like, that year we went through all the big teams and we had to really, you know, we had some crazy stories and luck of things that went our way. So it that felt like I was like it was meant to be. I suppose in the same way that when we talked to the Aussie guys when they won it last time, that they were like, so many things just lined up perfectly and went their way.
I think there's a common refrain among singles players in particular where, like, you can talk about skill all you want, but there is a component of luck to being able to win any large tournament of any kind, right? Yeah. Whether that's pairing luck or that four up save just going going your way just that one time or against your opponent that one time. Like, there are just components of luck through the whole process, right?
Yeah.
But I guess the question is from last year's WTC, what's the lesson you're taking out of last year's WTC and how are you addressing it for this year's WTC?
Hands down, preparation. We went in and I think we thought we were prepared, and then we got there and players put lists on the table and went, you know what? I didn't actually think that through. I didn't practice that. I didn't address that issue. I didn't think about that combination, even though post list submission or pre list submission, there was errors all over the place. It was things like we got to our set of eight and too many lists needed a table and their player just assumed they'd get that terrain. And then they actually went, oh, actually, I'm going to be third or fourth up to pick in a table, you know, in the way that's going to work in the matchups. I'm not going to get my points. We had to completely change our pairing approach in that regard. We had some lists that just didn't work how we wanted them to. Our Eldar list wasn't great. Our Necron list wasn't great. You know what I mean? We designed the tower list to go forward and pick the open board and dominate, but the other list needed terrain more, so that didn't work. And then the tower playing on heavier boards. And it had tools to do that with bombers and airburst bomb, but it didn't always pull in the points. We also had players say, this is definitely a green. You know, we have a ranking metric of green, yellow, black, amber, red. I know different countries have different process, but the same principle. This is a green, this is a yellow. And then they were coming in with reds. And it's like that. You can have a look, swing one game, but if consistently your list is going downwards, is it a player skill? Is it a practice issue? We've really addressed that right from the off this year. So it's been practice, it's been preparation, it's been talking about it. We're massively more involved in terms of Discord. I mean, I genuinely, as soon as there was talk of any sort of rules of ninth, there's been at least 6+ people every single night watching games and TTS, talking through games, throwing lists out, tweaking things. You know, and I think we're getting much better at refined practice. I hate some of our practice days we've had previous years where we get together for a day and people want to play the full kind of 3-hour game to completion and then go and have break for lunch for an hour, then play another 3-hour game. And you're like, it's not a singles tournament. Play a turn, play two turns, get the gist of it, go, okay, that works, that doesn't work, what do I need to tweak? It's that quick practice and getting through ideas, especially as we've mentioned with 10th. You haven't got the time to spend, you know, to go, oh, I'm going to just spend a few weeks tweaking my Eldar army and just see what, you know, how I want that to be finally balanced. You've got, I think it's what, 25, 26 factions, not even including all the sub factions of Marines that you can go with. You've got to go and get right into it and get stuck in. So 100%. And the teams that we talked to, I think blew us away a little bit in terms of some of the things of preparation they did. And it was really good to go as the COVID and the gap between events didn't help, but to come back after a couple of years, go, oh, we were the top dogs last one, and not have a good round in some rounds where we thought on paper we paired it right. Where our matrix said, you're going to get a close win or it'll be maybe a draw if it's a really top team. And then to get nowhere near that because our scores were wrong. That's preparation side. That is that. So we're addressing that, and I think we're doing it in the right way. I think everybody who went last year gets it, and no one person messed up all event or, you know, said that my army's great and then it was terrible. But there were definitely lists of players who went, I didn't do what we wanted it to do for the team.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of preparation, because you just mentioned then that was the thing that kind of lacked last year. I wanted to touch upon two aspects that you've already mentioned. So first of all, and that's a bit of curiosity from my side, more than anything, I think. You mentioned you organize team events, I mean, you as Team England, and how many such events do you do? And are they like open to everyone? Because I think I only know of Home Nations, which is like an invitational.
We haven't done an actual Team England organized team event for a couple of years now. We did used to do them more, but team events are, as an auger, are a nightmare because people drop out and then it's a team of four or three, you need to find that one extra person. Last time we had a team event, I had to drop out of the team I was in so somebody else could play. There's definitely more of an appetite for singles, but we're lucky that we've got, as we mentioned, the Allies of Convenience, the Welsh team guys are organising one every year now, September, October. The another gaming club in the Northwest that Matt Robertson is affiliated with organises a separate one. Those are open to the public, but they're a good, you know, really good starting point and practice point for us. There are starting to be a couple more team tournaments, again, in the kind of some of our bigger tournament venues. And then there's, I'm not sure how he branded it now, but Zapek is kind of Warhammer tournament community that he's got going in the UK across all the big cities, have got a couple of team events. So they're a really nice one that they've been coming in January, February time. And an international team tournament we won last year, and the guys came second at the most recent one, but won in February. So they're really good to go, I suppose, outside of our little bubble of maybe 10 to 20 teams to go to a bigger 40, 50 man team event of five or six players. So there are certainly, you can find some UK based events in some of the bigger cities a couple of times a year. And then it's just finding some of those smaller ones. Because again, the UK has got lots of players, but we're not the biggest country. It is, you are able to get across, you know, on a Friday night to the tournament the next day, wherever it might be. So it's not too bad.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask about those, like come back a little bit to that previous question about lessons learned and so on. So you went to the tournament. It wasn't your best performance ever. You came back to England. Is there a lot of community pressure in England? Like, you know, there is, for example, for the football national team, that it is expected that when there is a World Cup that you will bring, so the team will bring the trophy home. Is there a similar feeling for your national team in 40K? It's expected that you will perform extremely well.
And playing in the background.
Yeah, exactly. So is it like that? And do you feel that this year as well?
People, I think there's more awareness of it now because I just think it's becoming more mainstream. You guys know, like, there was a point, wasn't there, where I started playing WTC, that it was kind of this sub tournament where they tweaked all the rules of 40k and you had to kind of learn to play WTC 40k. Gradually, that's shifted, and the mindset now is it's mainstream 40k. I think that means that it's becoming more popular and people are starting to know about it. And you know, certainly a lot of the guys on the team now say, "Oh, yeah, I play for Team England and wear the shirts to events," but we don't have that community that's kind of geared towards that. Poland is very different in that regard, isn't it? You've got a WTC focused community, you've got a tournament scene that's based around that. I would love that to be something in the UK, but I just think we've had such a topsy-turvy journey of, you know, very much regional tournaments run by a couple of guys that didn't really talk. There is at least now a central kind of group of TOs in the UK that talk and share ideas and are starting to share ideas about FAQs and things. And one day down the line, they might really kind of unify that as a single kind of unofficial tournament organization. But for now, no, I don't think there is a pressure there. I think the pressure is that we feel like we are a really strong nation 40K, because you go to top tournaments in the UK, really big ones. You know, I went to the Games Workshop's big 40K event in Manchester, where they had 400 people. There were so many top players there that came and brought lethal lists. I feel like it's absolutely cutthroat from round one. Do you know what I mean? And I know when I've spoken to friends who go to the big US events or people in the US team, you know, they say, oh, you know, you can go to some of these big, you know, 300, 400 man events and you can get to the last round. Then you see somebody who you go, that's a real top, you know, recognized elite player. I feel like in the UK, because we are a smaller nation with a smaller pool of players, you get through the tournaments and you hit hard players really quickly and you have to be on your game. Five, six. That's the difference. We're now having five, six, seven round tournaments, where a couple of years ago we didn't. That just wasn't a thing. Everything was five rounds. So it's an interesting step forward in terms of where the meta is in the UK. But I think it does help us grow as a team. I would love to see it grow to be more popular. And that is something we're going to try and push this year with our sponsors. And we're starting to do a little bit more social media stuff over the next couple of weeks, and we're going to try and be a bit more active with this kind of army of coaches that we're bringing with us. You know, give them an iPhone and send them out into the crowd, go and talk to people, put things out there. Because I think that's the best way to get people involved. And you do, you find players who you've never heard of before, but are just as good at 40K as anybody.
Any right. team that could bring their own refs would probably win.
I've let loose our secret tactic, damn it.
I have perhaps the first challenging question of the day, which is, yeah, because I'm going to be the person who asks all the hard questions, so just wait.
You're not the only one.
Oh, I love it. I love that Tweak has joined a Team Hard Questions. How does this new hashtag, Abe or anyone but England, making Team England feel? Do you feel motivated? Do you feel targeted? Do you feel selected as like the rival of every other team that everybody's coming tainted. For you now? Tainted even.
I'm going to go to the team chat. And the first one, when I said I'm going on the chat tonight, guys, anybody want to, I mean, Alex came back with a hashtag Brexit means Brexit as a character. It's coming home. Apparently Naz is going home because he's a bit of a lightweight. Hashtag world metasoft is where we're at the moment. Oh. So I mean, we love being the heel. We've taken a wrestling term with a heel. We'll go and we'll be the bad guys. What a great, you know, it's like it being the being the Manchester United, the Liverpool, the Man City that everybody wants to beat. What a great place to be, isn't it? Because I've always had a great time at the event, but I've always felt like that was where England was anyway. It's just, we've got a hashtag that we can get out there and raise our social media profile. So thank you, world. I like that. It's a great challenge.
And then, keep going.
No, I was going to say, I just think... I don't know why. It's just because we're the natural home of 40K, guys, that it's just one of those things that the world is just resentful when we do win it.
I just love it how you sound exactly like a WWE heel would.
I'm doing it. I'm channeling my best wrestling moves. There
we go. You are. We're gonna find you a way to get a wrestling mask halfway
through. Yeah, absolutely.
Hated, adored, but never ignored.
Yeah. No, but I think the WTC is such a great event. And like I said, the big teams are they're great to play. And I love the tight games. It's great when you win a tight game against a tough opponent from a tough team. You know what I mean? And you can both go, oh, that was a really good game. And I think it's just firing us up, really. We really want to go. We want to impress. We want to show that we know what we're talking about. And I think we've got a strong team this year.
So the follow-up question is, which team do you want to call out as your rival team for this year, the team that you want to beat the most?
I mean, we've got to take
some shots fired.
We've got to take it back off the colonies, haven't we? I mean, they're
all of the colonies? There are a lot of them who are showing up.
I mean,
the entire Commonwealth?
Yeah. That is a good place to start, but I think Australia. I definitely a grudge for us is Australia because they beat us last year, and I think we that's another one where we paired it and we thought we'd done a good job, and we didn't get the round we wanted. We had some things swing our way, and then you know the official 40K sponsored team of Art of War, sorry, America. We would like to give them. We always enjoy beating them, and they were a bit of a bogey team. I think we hadn't, the year we won it, we hadn't ever beaten them, and then we beat them that year, and that was kind of a, as you mentioned before about luck and that feeling of it, that was one of those, oh my god, that came together perfectly. And we had some, that round was crazy. That was an 100-60 round, do you know what I mean, where there was no fine margins. You either absolutely whopped your opponent or you lost. So they're the two. We'd love to avoid Poland sometimes, because I think Poland is such a weird one. You guys are that are just tough. You have always given us, I think, the hardest rounds where we go in and we think we're doing okay, and then something goes wrong, and then this creeps away. And then at the end, you guys come in and go, oh, I was never in doubt. We were always going to beat you.
Yeah, unfortunately, I listened to Typhus and Nathan, I think.
Yeah.
Talking out at StatCheck again, Enter the Matrix. And Typhus said something that I think resonates really well with what you said, that Polish is this kind of like a gatekeeper for winning the WTC, unless you beat Poland, you're not going to get there. So sooner or later, I guess, you will have to face us.
Well, and that's it. And the year we won it, we beat you, and it and the round went really well. But again, I remember to my game, I had a game against Duda, and he used my dice to shoot a tank at a plane, and I've never seen so many ones and twos. And like, he had to go away and just have a timeout. And the ref came in and was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, it's okay. He just rolled all these dice and look at all those ones and twos." It's a general. He'll thank me for bringing that up. But when I see him next. But that's the kind of game where you go back and you go, that shouldn't have happened. If we played that 100 times, he should kill that plane, which leads to that, which means he gets this, which means that. And do you know what I mean? And it's that dovetail effect of those big games and those big rounds. A couple of things go your way. It just comes together. So, yeah, I think certainly from previous year, most recent years anyway, Australia obviously are holding the title. America always bring a strong team. Poland always been a bogey team. We have a funny relationship with France where we always have a tough, really close round with them. And it's always like a couple of points in it, like when we have managed to sneak the win the past couple of times. And I suppose Germany, when I started playing, they were the top dog. They were the ruthless one. They had the really tough characters. It was Poland and Germany were the two that battled it out. And the rest of us kind of looked up and went, if one of them cocks it up, we can sneak in. And the story of England's first WTC win was that they drew, or they played each other, I think, and drew. And England just managed to sneak in somehow and went, hey, we're the winners. that's where we're at in terms of those. But I'm calling out the colonies, the Aussies, the Americans, we're coming.
I love it.
It's quite a list, though.
Well, I mean, the game's all about lists. That's fine. We love it.
Just has to be the best list. Can't lose at the list building phase, you know.
But Fair enough. You're right, Nate. That's where we lost it last time. We lost it at the list building phase because things weren't prepared and the list didn't do what they were meant to. And you get there.
Lessons learned.
Yeah, that's it.
So in terms of preparation, I had another question. You've mentioned TTS quite a lot of times, but I think Poland, for example, is quite TTS heavy, and they've played loads of scrimmages, and I don't think the topic of a scrimmage with Team England ever came up. So do you guys do this kind of thing with other nations, or you just keep away from it?
We did, but we're keeping it in-house at the moment. And it was something that's been mooted and we've politely declined. And I think that is because we like to have five or six people go in and not so much, you're not really coaching them through the game, but you can make notes and then go afterwards. Well, you did this, this, and this wrong. If you did this, this, and this, what would happen? And you can be a bit more direct with that. It's hard to do that if you have a 3-4 hour game, do you know what I mean? And then you have to come back and find the time to feedback. So that's just, I'm a teacher. So it's just a bit of a change in nature of how we do the feedback and when we do the feedback to people. And I think it's more constructive that way. I think the nature of this edition changing also meant that, you know what, if it stayed ninth, we probably would have done a scrimmage because I think we had lists that we were happy to try out. And it's getting some of our new players to the team, of which there are considerable amount, you know, an experience of what it's like in a tough game. That's polite and friendly, but there's no take backs. And there's no, oh, I meant this was my intention, you know, oh, this, you shouldn't be able to see this. That is that WTC walks that fine line, doesn't it? Where you've got to be a gentleman, you've got to play nicely, but you also can't take the mick with being sloppy with your play all the way through. And I think they do a really good job of that every year. And I think the refs have got that. Last year's event, I thought it was great. And they ref that really well, that it was a really nice event. I didn't have any issues in games where if you've got a ref over, that's fine. And it was resolved. Great. No, you know, and every team, every round was shaking hands. We had a lovely time, even if we didn't quite get the results we wanted.
Okay. So I have a question that I think will kick off like a series of follow-up questions as well. But it's a question from a listener, someone that I guess you know, whose nickname shall not be mentioned, although you can figure it out because it starts with a P, ends with an A, and rhymes with Roomba. So
all of the secrecy gone immediately.
so smooth.
So here we go. Let me quote, ask him if they are seriously a team now, because do they share all their thoughts and ideas, remarks, lists, etc., because looking from the side, from the third person perspective, at their scene, at their tournaments, the fact that many people have their own media podcasts and so on, it does seem that they are the most internally divided team and the most difficult team to manage, taking ego and skill into account. I know it's a loaded question. We can divide it into smaller ones, but essentially this individual has asked like 5 questions in one that I also wanted to ask. So fire away, pick whichever aspect you want to pick, and then we will come back to the others if we forget something.
It's an interesting perspective on what this... See, it's so weird being in the UK scene. I don't have that perspective of what it looks like, the tournament scene and the groups. You do have lots of little podcasts and breakouts. I think that something we've tried to do is just to welcome the best players in from wherever they're from. Doesn't matter what team or affiliation or podcast they have. I mean, we clearly have someone. We've got Manny, who champions Glasshammer Gaming, you know, within there. We've got Vic, who's doing his own podcast at the moment. We've got our own group of guys. I feel like that we've got a group of guys, and we had this chat quite early on and said, what do we want to do about practice? What do we want to do? We're going to keep this. We've got little groups of circles of contacts outside. You know, there's a group of guys based in London. There's some guys based in the South. There's a lot based in the Northwest and a couple of them in the Midlands. We've decided that quite early on that we're just going to have to pull together and do this as a group. And like I said, we wrote those coaches in. And honestly, there's never been more activity in terms of the stuff we're firing back and forth. But it is a closed shop. We aren't putting it out there. You can't find our lists anywhere. We aren't putting ideas to sharing against anybody, and we aren't doing scrims or going and throwing games out. Throwing Naz out with a few decoy lists to go and see what he can find. He's a good spy. But I think managing maybe it is different for other nations. Managing the WTC team is a bit of ego management, and is a bit managing people who used to being the star player in the single scene, because it's things like they aren't going to get the faction that they want, maybe. You know, one person is picking their faction assignment this year. We haven't really got an idea of who's going to play what anyway, I think. But there's going to be a couple of tough choices when we get to our final 8 lists. And Josh is going to do that because he's been the captain when we've won it every time. And he's been the most experienced player who's been there the longest, you know. I'm the oldest, but he's the wisest in terms of WTC. And he that, you know, you go to player strengths in different areas. I'm good at the managing and the organizing, the chasing on that side, but he's good at that and going, this is what we're going to do. This is the best set. That's the strategy. I think we have had issues with ego and characters and clashing. And even last year, you know, that when you don't do well in a couple of rounds against big nations, you do come away and you start talking to each other, go, oh, that wasn't good. Why didn't we do that? Why didn't this person do this? What, they were too defensive. They were too reckless with the list. I think we are fixing some of that with the approach we're taking this year. But it is, you know, again, and it brings you back around to the question you said at the start. How do you become captain to WDC? You go and you see what it's like, and it's a lot of pressure. And if you don't understand that there's a whole community of people that are hanging on everything you say and you do and the list that you bring, and you get there, know who you are, and have looked at your list and have followed you at tournaments, and do you know what I mean? It's a whole kind of different sphere that you might not be aware of, and it can be a lot of pressure. So I think that it's really important to manage all of that, to have the right group of players. And I think the mentality is so important. We are a team. We definitely are. We're probably more of a team than we've been last year, but the year we won it, we were a team, and it feels like that. So there's the fine talk.
So I have hard question. The little chuckle is great. I love it. I have hard question number 2, since we're talking about managing the team.
Yeah.
And this comes from another crowdsourced question when I was asking people, what's the question that I should ask Team England? Mm. And the question that people came up with was, how do you manage the team image when you have selected players with somewhat spotted histories as players in 40K?
Where a player has had an issue in the year that we've picked him for the team, we have sometimes kicked them off the team for that year. We've got to selection point and gone, we're going to not take you, where somebody thought they might be picked. And we're really open and upfront with that. And my style of management or leadership or however you want to put it is, I'm just not going to go and moan about you behind your back. I'm going to just tell you straight up and we're going to talk through it. And if at the end of that, you don't ever want to talk to me again, that's fine, but that's never going to be my in. And we have 8 players that know what they're doing, and they know that if they go to the WTC and they get a yellow card or a red card or something that costs the team, then they're going to be off the team for the future. That's something we have out there with our players as part of when we select you. We have a really strict expectation of your conduct, how you act at events, how you behave. And yeah, some of the guys have spotted histories, but you know, none of them are arch criminals who've committed something so heinous. I mean, I don't know if you've heard, boys, but at the weekend we had one of the guys was playtesting his Orc list and enjoying being smashed by Eldar every round. But he played against a guy who had some loaded dice, and he called him out on it, and they got found. And I'll send you it at the end of this. There is now a sign saying the lucky 7, because the guy tried to flush the loaded dice and they didn't flush, and they came up as a loaded 1 because the 6 was weighted and a 7 in the U-bend of the toilet. So the game venue now has that pictured saying the lucky 7 with the date as a memorial plaque on the wall. I mean,
it did circulate the internet, so I think everyone and their grandmother had seen it.
But that's, you know, we've never had something so blatant as that. But if somebody had an issue like that now, they would go off the team. And I think that is would come with WTC's blessing, because I know that that is what they want. They want a great event that looks good, that sounds good, that people want to see, and they don't want any disrepute around it. And we have had, you know, we have had chats with them when they broke away to form their own event about who we'd pick and who'd be allowed to play. And I don't want to go any more detailed than that. I don't think that's fair to anybody. But everybody who's coming comes with WTC's blessing. And if they didn't, they wouldn't be coming. And I think there are players from other nations that I won't mention that aren't coming. And I think that is good for the community, because they're players that would do crazy things and behave in stupid ways. And you would go in, you know, if you have to coach your player that before they play someone, that guy is going to be an awful game. That's not what the event's about, is it? You know, my WCC trophy, I remember when I did one of the recruitment things one year to put on one of the forums to go, hey, if you want to sign up, my trophy is this tiny little thing from when I won. And it's like, it's smaller than my hand, the little yeah, kind of golden bit. My third place cannon when I came third at my first WTC. I mean, like, it's these little tiny things. You're not playing it for maybe the prizes and the prestige you get in a singles event. But it, like I said before, until you go to the hardest event in the world, appreciate it is that, and then actually win it, you can't really go, wow. That, you know, and say I'm gonna be able to go do that anywhere else again. It's just, I think you have to just go and experience it, and it's understand what they're after. It's not about prizes. It's about the challenge and knowing that you're the best. The 8 players we've got know that, and they know the expectation. And I think that we've got people who deserve to be on the team for all the right reasons.
So now for easier questions. I'm going to follow this up with a much easier question that isn't even 40K related. Move on to 40K content.
Sure.
So who, I know that Tweak is expecting a bird related question, but it's not a bird related question.
Humor me.
As long as it's not a sound effect of a question, that's fine. That's okay.
who is going to win in a fight? American NASCAR fans or English soccer hooligans?
Oh my God, English soccer hooligans. That is 100%. I mean, although, I mean, American NASCAR fans might turn up a bit more armed to the teeth, and we'll just have some knuckle busters, you know, and a plank of wood with a nail in it. But it's like, if we're going bare knuckle, I'm going with the English football hooligans, 100%.
Reasonable. I like it. Yeah, we've strayed from bird-related questions to.
I'm disappointed.
I hope you have one prepared for like.
I do have a bird-related question for the end. Don't worry.
Good.
I got you.
The show is saved. Right. So
is that going to be the sub event? We're all going to bring a hooligan or yarb from our own country and just set them up in a little side ring, like they did that year they did in Serbia, where they had the jousting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just don't talk about it out loud.
We just don't talk about it.
Wow. Oh, my word.
But yeah, you bring something along with the team to represent you. Anyway, 10th edition coming in, a bit late to the party. How does that make you guys feel? Does it give you a feeling of confidence that you can work out the meta and faster than anyone else, and that will give you the edge? Or do you think that puts you at a bit of a disadvantage, because if it was out longer, you would have much more data and be better prepared for the event?
I mean, we voted to keep 9th because I think Josh, my co-captain, very much, he much prefers certainty. But I actually, personally, I think if the game's changed, the game's changed. You know, and all the guys who played one of the years when the edition changed and they were stuck playing the old edition for a couple of months said it was really rubbish, because you just had to kind of switch yourself off from all 40k related content and just focus on the old edition. So I think it's actually probably made this preparation side we tried to push more enjoyable, because it is new and we're all consuming the new content as fast as they can push it out, and everybody was literally hanging on the release of the next points update and the next FAQ and the next map pack. So I think we're in a really good spot. We were really happy with 9th and where it was and what lists we were going to take, but if we're just going to embrace it and go with it, and I hope we're giving ourselves the best chance to find the best 8 lists. The worry is always that you miss one. I always give one of our players, who shall remain unnamed, stick that when it was Salamanca, when it was in Index 40K, when the last edition came out, and we missed Dark Talons, because that player said, no, Dark Talons are rubbish, don't take them. And then every player had 9 Dark Talons and a selection of stuff. And we were like, dude, why did you say this was bad? You know, and that was a rush. But it's been a lesson learned. We're not going to make that mistake again. We are literally ruling out everything into everything before we go, yeah, that list is dead, or yeah, that list is working. I do think it is making it more exciting for everybody, because it is a bit of nervousness and a bit of excitement about the new content. So I think it's the right choice.
Oh, Dark Talents, that gives a bit of PTSD. And, and that was before the age of 3D printing, so there were guys running around with these made out of wood.
Josh works for another gaming company, and he was at that point, he was a terror for turning up with this proxy from his company going, oh, look, this is a similar shaped flyer base. 9 of them, it cost me £20. So yeah, that's it. Scumbag. Yeah.
How are you feeling about 10th so far? Not only in the team perspective, but also in the singles perspective.
I think it was rough when it hit day one and everybody went, oh, Wraith Knights are good, aren't they? Oh, you know, like how mechanics like Fate Dice make it through testing and then you don't get to the other side and go, but if you come on like this and this with this unit, it's bad. I don't know. I'll never know that really. But I think that the game's taken a really nice twist. They've clearly gone, these things were all annoying for the new player and frustrating for the new tournament player as well. So there's lots of things they've tweaked. It's very accessible straight from the off. I like that they've released everything up front and all the rules are free and all the points are available. I think, and that has given them so much more scope now to go, this is broken, we'd have to play with it for 3 months. You know, and way back when they did the Iron Hands kind of release overnight fix, I remember it was a tournament at the weekend, and on Thursday they went emergency FAQ from Games Workshop. Iron Hands are now completely nerfed. You know, do you want to submit your list? They're not doing that, but we know when it's happening. We know probably what's going to happen. I think the game's in a really good state. I do think that some people are going to say, I don't like it. I do think combat has lost some of its flair and it feels like a shooting edition, but that's going to be how they tweak it with codexes and their separate rules. Terrain choices that events going to have to make going forward will all tie in to I think, enhance the edition. It is hard when it just hits first day and you go, well, these rules are different now. It's broken. I do think it's really exciting. I'm not always pleased that every unit is in 5s or 10s, but we'll get there with, you know, the 6-man or the 7-man little tweak unit. I'm not sure I like necessarily that you pay the points and drop the models down and attach characters, but we'll see. I suppose my worry is that they've got this process of you can pick the, like, you know, the Space Marine detachment, but you can put Space Wolves into it. are they going to make that mistake and break it? But you can at least say now, if they do break it, they're going to turn around and recognize that really quickly and fix it. So fingers crossed. Looks really good.
So you have players on the team who are, let's say, fairly young. I don't know if experienced enough to have played with cards previously, for example. UKTC used to, I mean, it was very similar to ITC, and the last edition just moved to ITC secondary missions, just like that. It became canon. Now it's cards. Now it's random missions. Are your players, all of them, ready to actually deal with that?
We have been doing some prep work with them on that, and we've got some, you know, simple mechanical tools like some tracking sheets and things to be able to go follow it, know it. As coaches, we're going to have, you know, coaches to help, look at scores and tables, but we're going to be asking our players to keep a track of their scores during the games. And I think if you can keep track of your cards as well. I've yet to see actually whether WCC put their actual refined score sheet out, but I don't think, you know, in the old ones, they used to have the tick list of which ones you'd scored by card, and they had all the cards listed. I do think for clarity, that is sometimes useful for players as well, just to have, so you can plot your score. That is a bit of forethought that maybe some players are getting used to and not having to put their games before. Before it was, I'm going to pick the secondary and that's how I play the game. So it is a bit of a learning curve there.
Do you think it's going to be a challenge to manage at the event itself?
100%. Like... Yeah, I was going to say, most of the pressure, I think, is going to come not in the practice games where you can talk about it and it's quite relaxed. But when you get to an actual WTC timed game, the pairings took the full 30 minutes. You know, like, we've got the captain's chat on the Discord and the, you know, the posts that come in sometimes from the ref team going, oh, well, you know, you've got 4.5 hours and you've got half an hour to pair and it shouldn't take that long, but it does. And in the top, like, you know, if England pair against Poland, nobody's going away from that table until everybody's paired and they all want to see it and they all want to know how it's worked out. Nobody's going to go, hey, man, we're playing Joker. Let's go find a table on the end. You know, that it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, let's grab a beer first.
Yeah, guys, let's grab a beer. We'll just chill out. How was your weekend? But it doesn't work like that in the top games. And then it's keeping track of your score is just something that goes by the wayside because you're so in the game. And I think that's something that we've done a bit of chat with our coaches about, that you have to help players with the stress of it. And, you know, you're not there to nag. You're there to go and, you know, my job is that I'm going to be running the line is I need scores from people when I ask for them. And different teams have different methods. You know, some teams have random scores on a board and the player points to it. Some people give me a colour, you know, whatever. But you've got to be able to say, what are the scores like? I'm interested what you guys think. I don't feel like the game is in the same state it was maybe as a few years ago, where if you're in a hole, you can go, well, I'm going to push. I mean, you can take a gambit and go, I'm going to try and get a big chunk of points at the end. But, you know, they're not going to come off most of the time. So I don't think that 10th lends itself to, I can play a conservative game and then throw it all the way at the end and score big. I feel it's very much going to be, you can have a bad game of cards. You could get terrible scoring options. That is something extra to factor in, that will be, some scores will swing. And that's going to be about how you support the players with that and how you inform the team that you need to scrape points where you can. Okay. I suppose... Yeah,
continue.
I was going to say, maybe it's about being a bit more risky on the smaller players of throwing a unit away for a card here or there, rather than you go for this big game play that smashes their army turn one. There'll be some lists that do that still. But... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess that's going to be the last question for me. We could... go on and on and on, but the lads here don't have that much time. They have to, like, Nathan actually has to go work.
I have to go back to work.
Yeah. So in the last episode that we recorded, we had Rude from Team Netherlands, and he said that when they practice, he intentionally makes the life of his players miserable by throwing them into, like, unpleasant situations. When they play, he approaches their table and just says, what's going on? This and this. Okay, this unit dies. You play without it. Bring me this and this many points, for example. Do you do that as well? And as a team captain, do you have 100% certainty that your players are stress-proof? Or, you know, do you know how they deal with stress? Can you handle that as a captain?
That is something that I think will come once we've got the lists. Because I think at this point, I don't think you can do that now while you're still trying to figure out the factions. And I don't think that's constructive. But thanks for the tip, Rude. I'll take that. Use that for the England boys. Be a bit harder.
Check out the other episodes. There are many more hints in there.
No, it's not that at all. It's I think we have got a lot of experienced singles players, but we have already, we have been a couple of times and said, but you're not going to be able to do that at the event. You're not going to be able to do that at WTC. You know, we talked about having one of the guys who've been to a couple more recently to talk to some of the new guys and say, these are some of the things that I found. And we are ramping up our in-life practices as we go forward. And we are pretty good then having somebody sit and go, you can't do that, mate. You can't do that. You know? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'm okay.
I'm laughing because Nazeem is posting random messages in the chat now popping up for me, Nazeem.
That sounds like Nazeem. I won't lie.
Oh, dear.
So how do you feel about yesterday's, I think, right? FAQ. Yeah. And, does it change much? And how do you feel about it appearing 2 days before the rules cutoff?
I think that it's good for the game, and I'm glad that it's come out, because I think there's just some things that needed fixing. There were some units that got hit that didn't necessarily need hitting already, but I was like, just go a little chaos unit or whatever. Or, you know, there were some factions like, oh yeah, Grey Knights, that are just super strong and needed a nerf, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Everybody's crying about how broken their Grey Knights are.
Well, you got 7 Plague Marines, so Death Guard are fixed.
Right? Oh, God. Yeah, this is it. Death Guard and Grey Knight meta. That's what it is going forward. No, if it's the right step for the game, I'm glad we've got it now. Because again, if you want the event to grow and you want to share the popularity of it, playing a weird version of 40K that isn't what everybody expects to play when they go down to their local stop or the next tournament doesn't really attract the interest, I think, in the same way. So, yeah, let's run with it. I'm glad the rules are in. I'm glad it's within our time frames so that, yeah, it is tight, but we still have a bit of wiggle room for submission to kind of put it on the table. Nothing mind-blowing. I do think that the Eldar Fate Dice change was the biggest one that just kind of doesn't kill the army, does it? Because that book is just... I don't know what they do when they write Eldar Codexes. It's like they just get wish lists and go, that's right, you can have it all.
Just take LSD and go like, all these colors.
But yeah, I've got so many Eldar units because I've got everything for Eldar and I'm like, I just can't use them now, can I? I like playing the weird quirky list and I'm like, no, it's not Eldar. It's not been that for years. So cursed they are, cursed.
They did mention that there's going to be like a small tweak at the end of July, but I think the rules cutoff for the WTC is this Friday, right?
Well, that's going to go in. The rules cutoff for the end of July is what post I saw in the captain's chat. I mean, again, I'm not expecting to be clarifications more than kind of like, oh, we've decided to change how this core rule works.
It's so just an FAQ document.
Yeah, it shouldn't be anything too crazy. But I think that all the changes look really good. Could they have changed indirect more? Maybe, but you know, points throwing in here and there to make things a bit more annoying. I don't necessarily think that Desolators were the greatest unit in the world, but 100 points extra for 10 more guys.
They're still cheaper than at the end of 9th, to be perfect.
Well, this is it. Yeah, you can do silly things with them, I suppose, and teleport them around and things, but we'll see. I like where the game is, though. I think the game is interesting at the moment. Until the first codex breaks it and we all start crying again.
It would make me feel better about Tyranids if they could, but...
The inevitable right. Power creep.
Yeah.
Poor Necrons last edition, man. They had this broken book at the beginning. And then... yeah, true. They're okay, aren't they?
Having watched a friend of mine play Necrons where his army just never lost a unit, it's just... Reanimation protocols continuously, but
yeah, Living Metal's a great rule, isn't it? Yeah, great stuff.
I do have one final question, and it's a bird related question.
Going
to put this out here. It's very hard to have people's national birds fight each other when one of the nation's bird is a robin. I'm sorry, England, but your national bird is in the Death Guard tier of national birds.
Wow.
Why not go with a tit? That's like...
So instead we're resorting to one of the similar questions to what we've used with other countries.
Oh, no.
Who wins in a fight? An English pigeon from London, or an American pigeon from New York City?
A Cockney pigeon.
I mean, I can't we have an English seagull? Because they're just fearless, man. Because if you ever go to, you go on social media and find it, some poor soul eating their fish and chips on the pier, and then the seagull just comes down and goes, nope.
We can do seagull combat. I'll accept seagull combat. Who wins? Seagull combat. an English seagull or a San Francisco seagull?
The Cockney pigeon has you, my friends. It definitely has you. I mean... No. To be fair, go back to your pigeons. I mean, does the American pigeon even fly? Does it just kind of sit there and it's kind of like the like the Viper in Game of Thrones versus the Mountain, picking at him. A wing comes out and grabs him, squeezes his head open.
And the Cockney pigeon hits him with his bread.
Yeah.
And then they both die. Just next.
Yeah, pretty much. There we go.
It's a tie.
Again,
that's what I'm hearing.
It's a tie. The American health and the dietary that they have. But the seagull eating fish and chips could be up there with American birds.
Vicious. Seagulls are vicious, trust me.
Same here.
Yeah.
With Joker, we live by the sea. We know exactly what you're talking about.
There are seagulls even not by the sea. There are seagulls in Chicago.
Leave your hooligans at home, bring a seagull from your home nation, smuggle it into Belgium.
Yeah, I expect to see at least one seagull patch on, like, a English jersey. That's just what I expect now.
Yeah, I'm so glad we did that. anyway, Joker, would you like to close the episode?
Sure thing. So, first of all, thanks to Tony from Team England for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been great.
This has been another episode of WTC Creme de la Creme on Contact Lost. And if you like what we do, please subscribe, hit the bell button, like our content, follow us on Facebook, on where else? On YouTube,
Twitter, Spotify.
Instagram. Yes, maybe on TikTok after the WTC. I will not let that get one go. Yep, we're also on all of the podcasting medias, so this will not only be released on YouTube, but also on there, so Spotify, Apple Podcasts, what have you. If your refrigerator can play it, you can listen to it there. We've also had a guest host in the form of Nathan from StatCheck. Thanks, Nathan.
I'm always happy to be here. It's great.
Yes, and we love the bird fighting questions. It's become a series, and I only join in for those. So really bummed about missing the last episode. Thanks to Tweak, my co-host, without whom we would not have this show at all.
Aww.
Because he's the one that's driving it, because I'm not that much. Never mind. And I myself was Joker, and that was a really long outro. So if you made it to the end, kudos to you.
Don't ever again say that I do it way too long. All right. It's been Contact Lost. Thank you, everyone. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.